We begin the current Amud Sef. Sivam is Daf Kuf Yud Ches. We begin on the second line of the Tam of the Yamud, where the Gemara begins the discussion of explaining the Mishnah which we ended off in the previous Daf. And that as the ratio of that Mishnah opened up with a case regarding this halacha that we know that a woman that goes overseas with her husband, she comes back, she says her husband's dead, she's believed to get remarried. Now, let's say there was a man with two wives, which each one is a tzara, is a co-wife to the other one. They both come back from their trip overseas. One says, my husband died. The other one says, no, it's not true. He's not dead. He's still alive. So that the Mishnah says, the one who said that he's dead, she's believed. She can go ahead and get remarried. The other one that said that he's not dead cannot go ahead and get remarried. Now, on that, the Gemara asks the following question. Taima, it sounds like from the Mishnah, the reason is, the Amr Lo Mes, because the other one, the co-wife, said that he's not dead. That's why she cannot get remarried. Now, the Diak, the inference is, but if she would have been silent, let's say the two women come back and they're in Bezdin, and only one speaks and says that he's dead, the other one doesn't say anything, sounds like Tinasi, then she would be able to get married because the other one is believed to say that he's dead and she's not contradicting that. But that's difficult because we know the previous Mishnah said five women are not believed to say testimony regarding the woman if her husband died, and one of them is her co-wife. So why does the Mishnah say that the other one says it's not true that he's not dead and therefore saying she's not believed to go ahead and get remarried? But even if she would have been silent, she wouldn't, because she has to say that he's dead. Because even though her co-wife is saying that he's dead, that's not enough because her tzara cannot be made regarding her. So the Gemara answers that actually, loy meis isruchalei. And that is, you're right. Although that if the co-wife would be silent, it's obvious that she would not be able to get married based on the testimony of her co-wife. What the Mishnah had to teach us was even when she's refuting the other one and denying and saying that he's not dead, the Mishnah had to be mechadish. It is a novel teaching to say that she cannot get married based on her co-wife's testimony. And the reason is because we would have thought to say that here is different than generally when a co-wife is saying testimony. Because we would say truthfully is hamayis, really her husband is dead. Now, v'had kama loy meis, this dead, it's pretty obvious when she's getting up in Bezdin and the other co-wife said that he's dead and she gets up and she says, no, it's not true. She refutes that and says he's not dead. Now, regarding herself, she would not be able to get married even if she was silent. Now, when she's speaking up, what's her point in saying he's not dead? Obviously, she's revealing that it's l'kalkula l'tzorahidika mechavna, and that is what we can perceive over here is she just wants to ruin it for her co-wife. She wants to make her co-wife into an aguna that she cannot get remarried. In other words, she hates her co-wife so much that she's willing to go ahead and just mess things up for her because she knows her husband's really dead. Now, although she herself now is not going to be able to get remarried because she's saying that he's not dead, on that the Gemara quotes the Pasuk, which is the Thomas Navsha in Palishtim Karma. What she's essentially doing is, like Shimshon was doing, he said, I know I'm going to be killed, but at least let me kill all those Philistines with me, and therefore, even though she's making herself forbidden to get remarried, she really agrees, she knows, because what's her point? For herself, there's no point in saying he's not dead. No one's asking you. If you're silent, you're anyways not going to be able to get remarried until you say that he's dead. So from the fact that you're saying he's not dead, obviously because you just want to mess it up for her. Now we're believing her anyway. And therefore, maybe we would think, if we're believing that woman that says that he's dead, maybe we should even permit the woman that says that he's not dead, because her whole point was only to refute her and just to mess it up. And therefore, we should assume that maybe she really agrees and she's just doing it to mess it up, but she really knows that he is dead. And therefore, since she's agreeing that he's dead, it's like essentially she's saying the same thing, that he's dead, and therefore she should be permitted to get remarried too. And that is what the Gemara says. That's the chiddush of the Mishnah to say that no. If you're saying he's not dead, then you're not believing, you can't go ahead and get remarried. Although we could assume that it's really you were scheming, as it seems pretty obvious that you're getting up and saying he's not dead, you're just trying to mess it up for her. But we do believe her, so maybe then your whole plot has been foiled and therefore you should be able to be permitted just like she's going to be permitted. The chiddush is no. If you're saying he's not dead, then we go with what you're saying and you can't get remarried. Now, then the Mishnah said, a machlekes, that if achas oimeres meis v'chuluf, let's say the two co-wives both agree that he's dead, but they contradict the facts. One says that he died a natural death and one says that he was killed. So on that, there's a machlekes in the Mishnah if we're going to believe them and let them get remarried or not. Remeir says no, and the Chacham say that yes, The Rebbe Lezer and Rebbe Shimon say that you can go ahead and, since they both agree that he's dead, they can get remarried, although they're saying it in different stories. Now, that the Gemara asks, the Liflig Remeya Beresha, the case that we just said before, that we were just discussing regarding the Resha, where the two co-wives are contradicting each other, one says that he's dead and the other one says he's not dead, why doesn't Remeya argue over there? And that is, over there, it seems like an anonymous statement, meaning that everyone agrees that the one who says that he's dead could get remarried and the one who says not cannot. Now why? According to Remeya, he says when the two co-wives are contradicting, even in the case when they both agree that he's dead, he says they cannot get remarried, neither one of them, because they're contradictory, and therefore, even though one says Hayrig and one says Mes, they can't get remarried, so why doesn't he say something in the Reisha to argue there too, and say that no, even the one that says he's Mes cannot get remarried, because her tzar, her co-wife, is contradicting her. So on that, the Gemara says, Amar Rebbe Lazar, he says, you're right. B'machlik yishenuya, the Reisha is actually, in regards to this statement, and the Reisha is dependent on a machlekes, just like the machlekes we have regarding the second case. And that is, it's true, it's not a stam anonymous statement that's going according to everybody. Rather, Rabbi Huda, Rabbi Shimon, the case of the Reisha was only going like Rabbi Huda and Rabbi Shimon, who they say in the case of the Seifa that a co-wife cannot contradict her other co-wife. And therefore, if I say that he was killed a natural death and I say that he was murdered, so everyone gets believed on their own merit, and you're believed to say that he's dead, and it doesn't make a difference that the other one's contradicting. So too, in the ratio where one says that he's dead, one says that it wasn't, that was going like a Rebbe Shimon. But you're right, according to Rebbe Lazar, he says actually Rebbe Meir's arguing not just on the Seifa, but would argue even on the ratio as he reveals his idea in the Seifa, where if they're contradictory, because one they're saying different types of death, then neither one is believed. So too, in the ratio, you're right, the one that says he's dead wouldn't be believed, because she's contradicted by her co-wife. But Rabbi Yochanan, he says actually that no. Afilu Tamei Rebbe Meir, you could even say that Rebbe Meir would not argue on the halacha of the Reisha, and he would say that Bahafilu Rebbe Meir Maida, that here even Rebbe Meir and the Reisha would agree that the one that says that he's dead would be believed to get remarried, even though she's being contradicted by the other co-wife. And the reason is because the Chol Loi Meis Be'edis Isha, whenever there's the testimony of a woman, of the co-wife, that he didn't die, that's not a refutation, and that is the Rabbanim believe the first woman that said that he's dead, because that was a Takan Sacham, that they believe her. Here that the other one's saying he's not dead, we don't believe you, you're not a full-fledged aid. We only believe the testimony of a woman, and even the woman herself, the wife, in the case of Iguna, but not to refute. And therefore, in that case, we're not concerned about, and Ibn Ramey would agree, but when they're both being believed to say their husband died, which is a halacha that we instituted because of Ikuna. And in that halacha, they're refuting each other, because one is saying one way that he died, the other one is saying a different one, that will refute each other, and therefore only there did he say that they're not believed to get remarried. Now, regarding this machlik is how to interpret the Reisha, if it's going to Ramey or not, the Gemara has the following question. We learn in our Mishnah that if Edom and Mes, let's say one witness comes and says, look, your husband died. The Edom and Mes, and another witness says, he didn't die. Or Isha Emeres Mes, one woman says that he died, and the Isha Emeres Mes, another woman said that he didn't die. Now, the terminology woman over here sounds like even if it's talking about the co-wife. Now, on that, the Mishnah said, HaRezu Loi Tinase, so the woman cannot get remarried because we have a contradiction of either one witness versus another one, or one of the women versus the other woman. Now, Bishlam and Rebbe Lazar, according to the first answer the Gemara gives, that Stama Kireb Meir makes sense to say that the end of the Mishnah is anonymously like Reb Meir, who he holds that a co-wife could refute the other co-wife even in the context of Loi Meis. El Rabbi Yechanan Kasha, according to Rabbi Yechanan, that he said that according to everybody, the Tzara, even according to Reb Meir, the Tzara, the co-wife, cannot be Machkesh, cannot refute the other co-wife. When she says Loi Meis, we don't consider her testimony as a valid refutation of the other woman that said that he was Meis. So then Kasha, you have that difficulty in the sense of, so what does the end of the Mishnah mean when we say Ve'isha Emeres Loi Meis, that we say you cannot get married, which sounds like even if it's that's the Tzara, but it's not true according to everybody, even according to Reb Meir, the halach is that we don't believe the Tzara to be Machash. But the Gemara concludes, Kasha, yes, definitely according to Reb Yechanan, that would be a difficulty, how to understand the end of the Mishnah, where there doesn't seem to be any one of the Tanoim in the Mishnah that would agree to that halacha of that Tzara, that's the Isha that says Loi Meis, to make halacha of Harezu Loi Tinase, because again, regarding Loi Meis, even Remei would hold that we don't hold of Akhasha. Now, continuing on this theme, the Gemara brings the next Mishnah, which qualifies this halacha of where the woman that comes back from overseas trip with her husband and says that he's dead and that she's believed to get married. So the Mishnah says, Ha'isha shahalcha hiya b'ayla b'nin sayam. If a woman and her husband goes overseas, Ubova amar meizbala, she comes back, she says, my husband died. This is the halacha we've been discussing in this parak. Tinase v'titlu ksubasa, as we said, that she can get married, and she takes her ksuba, as we mentioned before. Now, however, the Mishnah does say, but sarasa sura, as we mentioned this halacha in the previous Mishnah, her co-wife is forbidden because she's not believed regarding her co-wife. She's one of the five women that were concerned is going to try to mess her up. Now, but the Mishnah says even more. Haisa, if the co-wife, who she's not believed regarding to say that her husband's dead, if she was a bas Yisrael l'kayin, let's say she was a daughter from a family of Yisraelim, and the husband here that's under discussion if he's dead or not was a kayin, actually teichel b'truma. She could continue eating truma based on the chazaka of the presumption that her husband's still alive. And she's not concerned at all, we don't even consider it as a suspicion, to the testimony of her co-wife. And the reason is, since her co-wife is not believed to have her marry someone else to say that the husband's dead, so she's neither believed to invalidate her from her husband, and therefore we consider it as the chazaka, as her husband is still alive, and therefore Bas Yisrael HaKayin could eat the truma from her husband the Kayin. That's Divrei Reb Tarfon. That's the opinion of Reb Tarfon. Now, Reb Akiva, he argues, he says, no. Ein zu derech meitziyasa, the Gersa meitziyasa, midei aver. That's not the way that you could remove her from the possibility of sin. Ad shetehe, until you'll actually, you have to be stringent both ways. And that is, you're right. Asur linase, as the Mishnah said, that for sure the co-wife is forbidden to get married to someone else because her co-wife's testimony is not believed. She's one of the five women. But Rabbi Kiva says, that's why I argue on you, Vasur Melacha b'truma, but she's still forbidden to consume truma because maybe she's not lying. You're right, we're concerned maybe she is lying, but maybe she's not. And if she's not, maybe the husband really is dead, and we have to be concerned for that. And therefore, although she cannot get married to someone else, but she's still not allowed to continue eating her husband's truma because maybe her husband's dead. And if her husband's dead and she doesn't have children from him, she cannot continue eating truma after his death. Similar machlekes, which Gemara will explain why we need both cases. Amra meis by, let's say the woman comes back from overseas and says, my husband's dead. Bachkach meis chami, and then she says, and then my father-in-law died. They were together, the car, it was an accident, and one died, and afterwards the father-in-law died. So the halacha is, tenasa v'titik ksubas, as we said, when she says testimony that her husband died, she can get married and take her ksubah. But, v'chamoisa sura, her mother-in-law is forbidden based on her testimony that her father-in-law, meaning that the mother-in-law's husband died. And the reason is, as we said, she's one of the five women. A daughter-in-law is not believed to say testimony regarding her mother-in-law. Now, the chiddush in this is that even though first she says, my husband died, which the moment her husband, quote, is dead, because she's believed to say that, then she's no more a daughter-in-law to that woman, and she would be, so to speak, like a foreign, unrelated woman. In spite of that, she's not believed, as the Gemara said in the previous daf, because actually we would say the truth is, her husband didn't die, her father-in-law didn't die, and she's just trying to mess up her mother-in-law and have her go ahead and marry someone else and then be forbidden to her husband and to that new person. So therefore, the mother-in-law would still be forbidden. Now, if the mother-in-law was a Bas Yisrael, a Kayin, let's say her father-in-law was a Kayin and her mother-in-law was a Bas Yisrael, who is only due to her marriage to her husband, the Kayin, that's able to eat truma, so Teichel b'truma, Divrei Reb Tarfon says she could continue eating truma. We presume that, just like we're not believing her to make her permitted to marry someone else, neither is it to make her forbidden to her husband. She's still considered chazaka, married to him. But again, Rabbi Akiva Aimer says, no, ein zu derech meitziya mideaver, that's not going to be the appropriate way to remove her from sin. Until she's forbidden from marrying, again, because we're concerned that maybe the daughter-in-law is lying. But v'asum alecha b'truma, she will be forbidden to consume truma because maybe she's not lying. And maybe the husband, the father-in-law, is really dead. So you're forbidden to marry, but you're also forbidden from consuming truma. Now, the Gemara says, as we alluded to this, that b'tzricha, we needed both of these cases of saying, which seemingly is the same halacha, of the co-wife and of the mother-in-law. And the reason is because, d'yid marach kamayse, we only said the first case of the Mishnah regarding the co-wife. So then, b'ha'kam Reb Tarfon, we would say that only over there does Reb Tarfon say that the co-wife is permitted to continue eating truma with the chazaka that her husband is still alive, which ultimately means is because we totally, absolutely don't believe the woman that's saying the testimony that the husband is dead, because maybe only over there we would say in absolute terms that we're totally assuming that she's lying, is because that's regarding a co-wife, mishum ditzara de gufa. And that's because this woman that's coming back and saying, you know what, our husband died, and we can go ahead and get married. So on that, obviously, we say that the co-wife cannot get remarried based on her testimony because she's lying. But on that, the Gemara is saying, if we only said that case, we would assume that maybe only over there, Reb Tarfon says she's such a liar that she wants to mess up her co-wife, that we say that, you know what, for sure she's lying. And you could even continue eating truma because there's a physical pain that's caused to this woman through her co-wife that she really wants to mess her up. And that physical pain is because her co-wife steals intimacy from her and her husband because he has to share time between the two wives. So that's where Reb Tarfon would say that, oh, for sure she's lying. She wants to mess her up, that she should marry someone else, and then she'll be ruined from going back to her husband. Now, even more so, even if the woman herself was saying the testimony, goes and marries someone else, that still wouldn't be right, because that's the concept which we know as Tumas Nafsham Pelishtim, that she'll mess herself up. She'll kill herself just so that she kills her co-wife. That's how much she hates her. Again, like the metaphor of Shimshon, where he was killing himself at the same time, but at least that he kills all the Pelishtim with her. Now, but regarding the second case of the Mishnah of the mother-in-law, where the tzara mili d'alma, where, yes, there's pain from the mother-in-law, but it's not a physical pain. You don't lose intimacy with a man. It's just verbal pain that you get where she tells her son that your wife does this and your wife does that. So then, we would say, the Reb Tarfon would agree to Reb Akiva that it's not definite that she'd be lying so much that she really wants to mess up her mother-in-law, because although, yes, we don't believe her to get allow the mother-in-law to remarry, but regarding the stringency of truma, we should be concerned that maybe she's not lying, because we don't think for sure she's scheming. We definitely cannot believe her to allow her to get married, but maybe she's saying the truth. It's not all about just messing her up. It's not such a anger like it is to her co-wife. Maybe that he would agree that you have to be concerned and not be able to eat truma. So therefore, we have to say that case too. Now, v'yitmar, and if we only said the machlekes between Tavrim Kiva Baha by the case of the mother-in-law, well, then Baha come Rebbe Kiva, maybe only over there did Rebbe Kiva say you have to be concerned again, because it's not such an animosity to mother-in-law. Avahach, but regarding the case of the co-wife, imamoyid Rebbe Tarfon, we would say that maybe he agrees to Rebbe Tarfon that for sure a co-wife just wants to plot and scheme and mess it up for the co-wife, and therefore, even there, Rebbe Kiva would agree that you don't have to be concerned, and you have a chazaka that you can continue eating truma. Tzricha, therefore, we have to say both cases again, because then either Reb Tarfon or Reb Akiva, we would say that maybe the other case, he would agree to the other mandama. Now, that the Gemara says, Amar Behuda Mashmul, halacha k'Reb Tarfon, the halacha falls like Reb Tarfon, that we, just like we don't believe her, we don't consider it even at all a statement regarding the co-wife, and the co-wife or the mother-in-law could continue eating. We're not concerned at all with the testimony of that suspected woman. Now, Amar Abaya says, actually, we also learned like this, seemingly an anonymous Mishnah later on, that the halacha is like Reb Tarfon, where the Mishnah is talking about a case where a woman goes with her husband overseas. Now, when she left over here, she didn't have a child, which means to say that the chazaka, the presumptive state when her husband dies, is that she's going to have a yibum, because there's no children. Now, when she finally comes back from the trip overseas, she comes back and she says, Nitin li ben b'menei nesiyam. A child actually was born to me when we were overseas, but meis beniva achkach baili. There was an accident, something happened. My son died, and then my husband died. Now, that testimony doesn't remove the original chazaka, because now, based on her testimony, at the time of death, she didn't have a child because her son died before the husband, so then she still requires yibum. So then, she's believed to say what she's saying, which ultimately is saying that she permitted for yibum, because at the moment of death, she's saying that her son was already dead, hence she's obligated in yibum. We believe her because that's going together with the chazak, with the original presumptive state, which is that she didn't have a son then at all, which is also yibum, so she's not contradicting chazaka, so we believe her. But if she says that, yes, I had a child, and moreover, b'ayli v'achkach b'ni, first my husband died, and then my son died, where that ultimately means to say that at the moment of death she had a child, and therefore she was exempt from yibum, then the Mishnah says, einan emenes. There she's not believed to go out and marry someone else without chalitza, and the reason is because this halacha that we believe a woman to say that her husband died when she was overseas, that was only regarding her husband. Where that's a principle in halacha that we say because a woman is daiko mintzava, she's precise and she'll make sure that she'll find out that for sure he's dead, because or else there's going to be so many penalties levied against her if he really is still alive. Now, but to remove herself from the halacha of Yibum, there we never made this takana of believing the woman to say that her husband died, because sometimes she'll hate her brother-in-law Har Yavam, and therefore maybe she'll be lying and she won't be telling the truth. And therefore, she's not believed to say that she's not obligated in Yibum and that she had a son at the moment of death, because, again, that's going not with the Chazaka, because the Chazaka was, as she didn't have a son when she left, which was obligated in Yibum, so she's not believed. However, v'cheshen ledvareha, however, we do suspect her words, because ultimately, she removed herself from the Chazaka, which was a heter for Yibum. When she left, there was no kids. Which means, say, if her husband's going to die, he's going to have the heter of Yibum. But with her statement, she was saying that she had a son at the moment of death, which means to say that she herself is creating an issa, shavi nafshe chaticha, the super type of an element, which is to say that that you don't have that heter of Yibum. Now, but the problem is you're not believed to say that there's no zika at all, and therefore if the Yavim comes to do Yibum to her, we don't allow him, but rather, since we're somewhere in this bind, because at one point she's not, on one hand, she's not believed to say, to go against the Chazaka, that she is obligated in Yibum. Yet at the same time, we do suspect for what she's saying, which is because she's removing herself from the heter of that Chazaka, which is to have Bia and Yibum with that Yavam. So you have to do Chalitza and not do Yibum. Now, on that, Abaye makes the dig from that later Mishnah, when we say that we're chayshin lidvareha, it sounds like that's a mute. We are concerned for her testimony when she says that I'm not mechuyev in yibum. Now lidvarehu dechayshin, what that sounds like is that's only for her testimony that we make this concern. Meaning when there's someone that's not believed, so then they're not believed. End of story. But it sounds like only for her, even though she's not believed, but okay, we do suspect that maybe she is telling the truth, and therefore we say, okay, so she can't go ahead and do Yibum, although she's not believed to say that she's not obligated in Yibum, and therefore we should have Yibum, but she's saying that really she had a child at the time, so okay, so we suspect, okay, fine, so you can't do Yibum, but you do Chalitza. But the diuk is, holo divrei tzara in chayshin, but for the testimony of her co-wife, which is definitely even worse in the sense of not being believed than the woman herself, there we're not even concerned. Shemamina, that's what Bai says. It sounds like from that Mishnah, as we're saying, that the Loch is like Reb Tarfon of our Mishnah, not like Reb Akiva, that for the testimony of the Tzara, not only she's not believed, but we're not even concerned for what she's saying. And therefore, although for the woman herself we make this concern, but for the Tzara, not at all. And therefore, as Reb Tarfon said in our Mishnah, she could continue eating Truma Becheskes, that her husband is still alive. The Gemara continues the next Mishnah with a similar type of a concept, not to the idea of this perek, but more to the previous Mishnah, which we had this Machlokes Reb Tarfon Akiva. What do you do when there's a doubt? Are you suspect for that? What do you do in such a type of situation? The Mishnah says as follows: Kiddush achas mechamish nashim. If a man gets engaged, does the halacha of kiddushin, which is, let's say, giving the ring to one of five women. There was five women, they gave it to one of them. Now the inyudeh is a kiddush. He doesn't recall which one of these five women was the one that he got engaged to. But kalachas ameris is a kiddush. Every one of those five women saying, I was the one that he got engaged to. So the halacha of the Mishnah says is that if he doesn't want to marry all five of them, so nisin get l'chalachas ba'achas, he gives each one of them a get. Umanich ksuba beinem. Now he doesn't want to have to shell out for each one a ksuba, a dowry, because whoever it is that he's divorcing now, he has to give the ksuba to, doesn't have to pay up five times, he only got engaged to one of them, so he puts the ksuba between them, umistalik, and he goes away, and then let them fight over it, because whichever one is the right one, let them go ahead and take it. That's the Reb Tarfon, that's the opinion of Reb Tarfon. Kiva Imri says no. Ein zu derech mitzi midi aver, again, this is similar to the idea, what his terminology in the previous Mishnah, that's why the Mishnah is bringing it here, that's not the way you get out of sin. In other words, you have a halachic obligation to give the ksuba to the woman that you're divorcing. Now, yes, it was only one, but you don't know which one it was, and therefore, the only way you could remove yourself from sin of paying up the ksuba is actually eat and get vig ksuba l'chalachas v'achas. Not only do you have to give each one a get, you have to give each one a ksuba, because what do you mean let them fight over it? Let's say the one that doesn't really, is not the one that was engaged, ends up getting it, and the one that you have to give it to, you don't give to, and therefore it's your obligation, not their obligation. Similarly, gezel echad mechamisha. Let's say he steals money from one of five people. Ve'en yedem, he's a gezel, it was a pickpocket, he was five people, he doesn't know who's the one he stole from. And kol acher oimer, oisik gazel, everyone's saying, it was me, I had that money, you stole from me. So the halacha is, manich gzel binem. So I didn't steal from five people. You go and you put the stolen money between them, umistalka, and then it goes away and let them fight over it because you guys are all claiming, whoever's the liar is lying, let the one who's saying the truth take it. That's the rib tarfim. Pekiva Imir says, no, that's not a way to remove yourself from sin. You got to pay up every single person. It's your obligation. You don't know who it was. Doesn't make a difference. You have to pay up every single person to make sure you're paying up the right person that you stole from. Now, the Gemara makes the following inferences from the two cases mentioned in our Mishnah. Now, the first case mentioned was Kidesh Katani. We learned that he got engaged to one of five women. Now, you could say, and that's what the Gemara is going to be discussing, that maybe only over there, in the case when you just got engaged, did Reb Tarfon say, let's say, gave one of the five women a ring. Where that is where Reb Tarfon says, okay, look, you know, I don't know who I got engaged to, but I'm only going to put the ksuba in middle of you five, and you could all fight over it. And maybe only there did Reb Tarfon say that because he didn't do any physical action that depreciates the value, let's say, of this woman. He didn't do anything demeaning to her to say that, look, I have responsibilities to you. Look, all I did was I gave you a ring. Now, I'm divorcing you now, and I owe you a ksuba, but each one of you is claiming that it's you. Fine, it's not my responsibility. You can go ahead and discuss it amongst yourself. But, ba'al loikatani, the Mishnah does not say that Reb Tarfon would be arguing even the case of when he had cohabitation with one of the five women, and that's how he got engaged. In other words, that sounds like that in such a case where he did an action, a physical act with one of the five women, where that degrades the woman by doing kedushin through cohabitation, maybe there, it sounds like from the Mishnah, that he would have to fulfill, he would have to go the distance and give every single one a ksuba. That's what it sounds like, because it says if he was made kedushin, which he gave a ring or gave a document, there it's enough to just go ahead and say, okay, you know what, I don't know who it is, but I don't have to go and find out who it is. Go ahead and discuss it amongst each other. But if he went and did a maisa biya, where he actually did a maisa maguna by getting engaged through doing an act of cohabitation, that it sounds like that Reb Tarfon maybe would agree that you would have to go ahead and give each one a ksuba. Now, however, the second case of the Mishnah seems to be a contradictory type of an inference because Gezel Katani. The Mishnah says that he stole from one of five people. Now, that sounds like that since he did a biblical violation of stealing, that sounds like there is where Rabbi Akiva penalized the person that he has to go ahead and give every single person money back because he has to make sure he's giving back to the right person. But, Lokach, if let's say he just took an item, merchandise, from one of five people. I mean, he wanted to purchase it or whatever it is. Now, he doesn't know who it is that he took from, but he wants to give back the merchandise. Well, he didn't steal. He was going to purchase it, and then he's giving it back. There, like a ton, there, Reb Akiva does not say and argue and say, oh, you have to go ahead and give it back to every one of the five people. It's only when you did something wrong, like stealing, that's where it sounds like he's saying you have to give it back to everyone. But if you only just took, then it sounds like he would agree to Reb Tarfon that you could just put it back and let them fight over it because I didn't do anything wrong and I don't owe five people merchandise. Now, that the Gemara asks, so mani masnitin. Based on these two different inferences, it's hard to understand who is the Tana of our Mishnah. Because loy Tana Kama, v'loy Reb Shimon b'Elazar, as we're going to bring in this Braisa, it doesn't seem to be like the Tana Kama's version of the Machlokes Reb Tarfon Reb Akiva, and neither like Reb Shimon b'Elazar's version, because the Tana learned the Braisa. Reb Shimon b'Elazar, Omer, he says, Loi nechleku Reb Tarfon Reb Akiva, they didn't argue. Al shekidish achas michamish nashim. He says that they didn't argue if, let's say, a person just gets engaged to one of five women, and ve'en yidei is a kiddush doesn't know who he got engaged to. There, everyone agrees shemenich ksuba b'neim or mistalik. That even Reb Akiva would agree that you just put the ksuba amongst them, and then you go away and let them argue about it because you didn't do anything wrong. You didn't do anything degrading, and they're all saying it was them. I don't know all five of them, so let them discuss it. Regarding what did they argue about? Al Shabal, where he did an act of bia. That's a degrading action in a woman to be make kedushin through bia. And that is Reb Tarfon Naima. He says Manech Ksuba B'nei Mistalek. He says still over there also all you're obligated to do is put it amongst them and then you can walk away. That is Reb Akiva Omer. He says no. Ad Shisham Cholachas V'Achas. Where no, then you have to pay every single one because he did an act of bia for kedushin. That's not so appropriate, and therefore, there's such a woman, you can't just divorce and just let her have to fight over the ksuba. You have to make sure you're getting the money to her. Similarly, Leinachluku Reb Tavra and Bekiva on the second case, Ashalokach Mekach Mechamesh Mene Odom, they didn't argue if you just took merchandise. The Ein Yidei Meizim and Lokach, you don't know who you took it from, that there everyone agrees, Shemenech Dime Mekach Benem Mustach. All you have to do is put the money for the merchandise amongst the five of them, and you can walk away. I have to pay up every single one of them. The Machlokes is only when you stole from the five of them, where you did an inappropriate action. That's Reb Tarfon says, where he still says it doesn't make a difference. You just put the stolen money and you could walk away. Reb Kiva says, no, they have to pay up every single one of them. Which is obviously that the line that Reb Shimon Lazar is taking in this Machlokes is only when you did an inappropriate act. Now, on that, the Gemara says, even the fact that Reb Shimon Lazar says that when you didn't do an inappropriate act, which there's two variables, inappropriate and act, which therefore he says they're not arguing by when you just did Kedushin, where you didn't do an inappropriate act, that is of Bimakadosh Bebiya, or if, let's say, you did just taking merchandise, you didn't steal the merchandise, that everyone agrees, even Reb Kiva, that all you do is put it back, and you don't have to give to each one of the five, which, again, is not like the inference as we said in our Mishnah, because our Mishnah has contradictory inferences, because it does mention the case of Kiddush, which Reb Shimon Lazar says that Reb Kiva does not argue on that case, and our Mishnah says that they do argue, but the inference is, from the fact that this is only Reb Shimon Lazar, the Tanakama Sava, that the Tanakama, who argues on Reb Shimon Lazar, that he says that by Kiddush and Lokach, it is Pligi, that they do argue, even though that there is not really a violation that you're violating. But the understanding of that is that the Tanakam would hold that when there was Baal and when there was theft, that they even Rebbe Tarfon would agree to Rebbe Kiva, that then you do have to go ahead and give back to each and every one. And therefore the Gemara Salmani, who is the Tanakam Mishnah, as the Gemara says, Itanakam, it was like the Tanakam's version of their machlok is, well then listen to Kiddush V'lokach. It shouldn't have said Kiddush V'gazel. According to him, Gazel, even Reb Tarfon agrees you have to give back to each and every person. It should have said B'makadosh, or just taking, where you didn't do something really so inappropriate. Then you don't have to give it back to each and every person. But Gazel you do. And Reb Shimon Lazar, if the Tanava Mishnah is Reb Shimon Lazar, well then listen to Bo'al V'gazel. It should have said that he was Makadosh with Bia, or with, and then the other case of theft. Why does it say Kiddush V'gazel? It seems to be contradictory inferences regarding the two different interpretations of the machlokes. So the Gemara says, "Lo'ilam Reb Shimon Lazar." The truth is, the Tanava Mishnah is like Reb Shimon Lazar. Well, my Kiddush, what does the Tanava Mishnah mean when it says that they argue regarding a case of Kiddush Achas Mechamesh Nashim? It means Kiddush Bebiya. It means that he did Kiddushin through cohabitation, which that's embarrassing for her. And even so, Reb Tarfon says that you're going to be exempt over there. Now, so therefore that results is because that's going like Reb Shimon Lazar, who says Reb Tarfon will always exempt from going to each one of the five women, even when you did an inappropriate action. But now the Gemara addresses that if that's the case, seemingly Gezel and Kedushin, which we're saying is Kedushin with Bia, is essentially the same concept. When you do an inappropriate action, that Reb Tarfon says you don't have to give back to each one, and Reb Kiva holds you have to do. So why does it say both of the cases? On that the Gemara says, no, you need to have both of them. That is Tana Kiddush. We said the case of when you Mekadosh Bebiya, L'diacha Kerech Reb Kiva. That was to say the thrust and the Kiddush of the opinion of Reb Kiva. And that is De'avagavti Yisur D'Rabbanan Ovid. Although the max of what you're doing inappropriate here is only a rabbinic violation, which as the Gemara had brought previously, that Rav gave lashes for someone that would make Kiddushin through a cohabitation, and there's no biblical violation over here. Yolado, one of the three ways of Kiddushin actually is through Bia. It's just rabbinic injunction not to do it like that. And still, that's the Chiddush. Reb Kiva would still say that Bukanis, that still that he penalizes the person to have to go ahead and give back the ksuba to each and every person, which is a Chiddush because it's just a rabbinic problem. Now, to on the Gezel, the reason why we said the second case of theft was L'Hidiyacha Kerechid Reb Tarfon. That was to say the Chiddush of the other opinion, the novelty of Reb Tarfon's opinion, where the Avagafti Isur Derais over that, even though the person who did this wrong thing violated a biblical prohibition of theft, still like Kanis, still Reb Tarfon held that we don't penalize the person who stole, ultimately only stole from one person, not from five, and that's what the Chiddush Reb Tarfon is, that in such a case, all you have to do is put it back and say, look, guys, I know I stole. I'm giving back the money, but I'm not giving back to five people. And you guys can fight over because obviously four of you are lying and let the right man end up getting the money. That's again a chiddush Reb Tarfon, because you would think if a person did a biblical violation, he has the responsibility, the onus to find the right person. And that the chiddush is, Reb Tarfon says, that the person is not obligated. Now, the Gemara continues with the final Mishnah. This parak, again, continuing on the theme of this parak, where you have a ha'isha shaholchehi yabailam din sayam. You have a woman and her husband that go overseas. Now this case adds on another person here where they had their child. It was the family of three. Mother, father, and son went overseas. Now she comes back and she says that something unfortunate happened, that my husband died, and then my son died, which ultimately that testimony is saying that I'm permitted to marry Leshok, even though now I don't have any children and my husband's dead, but at the time of death, my son was still alive. He died only after my husband. And therefore, there's no Zika to the Yavam, and if I'm permitted to marry anyone else, that the Mishnah says, Nemanis. She's believed. And the reason is because when she left over here, the Chazakah, the presumptive state that she was in, was a state of Heter L'Shuk, meaning because we knew she had a child, which means say that there's no obligation of Yibum. Now, although she herself is making a problem for herself because she's saying that, oh, he's dead, and your husband died, you have no children, maybe there's Yibum, maybe he died before your husband, that's the concept known as Hapesha Asahu Hapesha Heter. Meaning, she created a problem for herself, she was Asar with her mouth by saying that he's dead, so that same mouth can go ahead and say, permitted that, oh, yes, he's dead, but he died after the husband, and therefore, that still remains with the original Chazakah that she was permitted, and it's only her mouth that would make it a problem, so then her mouth can make it permitted by saying but and qualify that he only died after the husband. However, if she says, meis b'ni v'achkach meis b'ayli, that first my son died and then my husband died, which that ultimately means that she is obligated in Yibum because at the moment of death she had no children, then she's not believed to do Yibum with the Yavim, because the reason was because the Chazakah is refuting that. The Chazakah, the presumptive state, was that she's exempt from Yibum because she had a child. Now, she's trying to say with her testimony that she's obligated in Yibum, that she's not believed to go opposite a Chazakah. Again, her whole nemunis that her husband's dead is only regarding this halacha of Igun, that she can marry someone else, but not regarding the halacha of Yibum. But, v'cheshen l'dvareha, we are suspect regarding her testimony, where because she made a problem of a shavich anav shechaticha disur, she removed herself from at least the heter component of Yibum. And therefore, that she's not, again, she cannot go ahead and remove herself from the chazak of Yibum that she had, but she cannot go ahead and either do Yibum at all, do Yibum and have beer with him, because she's removing herself from that chazakah by what she's saying, which you can't do it l'kula, but you could do it l'chomer. You could say that you created an iser for yourself because you said that you are forbidden to other people. And that is based on the chazakah. The halacha would be that she would be permitted to marry other people, because the chazakah was that she had a son and that the son was alive at the time of the husband's death. But she's saying that no, that the son had died beforehand, that she's permitted to Yibum. Now, so again, the halacha is she's not believed, because the chazakah is contradicting that. So therefore, she can marry other people and she's not permitted to the Yavam. But we're suspecting her words to say that she's forbidden to everybody else. And the reason why she's forbidden to everybody else is because she herself is saying that, no, I am obligated in Yibum. So, v'cheletz v'lemisibem is at least chalitza she has to have, again, because of her problematic statement that she made, which forbids it to everyone else, because she said that she is obligated in Yibum. So she cannot do it l'kula, but it is there l'chumra, based on the concept of shava enaf shechadich esur, a person could create an isur for themselves when they say testimony regarding their own halachas. The Mishnah continues, if she says, nitan li ben b'medina siyam, let's say, when she left here, she left without any children. And hence, the means to say that the chazakah, the presumptive state she was in when she left, was that there's a mitzvah of Yibam if her husband's going to die without any children. But she says, when I was overseas, I actually gave birth to a child. But she says, meis b'niva achach meis b'ali, my son first died and then my husband died. So then the halach is nemenes. Again, she's believed to do Yibam with the Yavam. Again, because the chazakah was that she had Yibam. Now, although she's saying she had a child, but she says the child died anyways before the husband. So that goes together with the chazakah, and therefore she can go ahead and do Yibam. But if she says meis b'aliv achkach meis b'ni, but if she says this son that I gave birth that you never knew about, I gave birth to overseas, first my husband died and then my son died, which is that's the type of statement is trying to say, therefore I'm not obligated in Yibum. Again, ain't in a menace. She's not believed to be exempt to go ahead and marry Lashuk, because again, the Chazak is saying that no, that you're obligated in Yibum. But again, but we are concerned for her testimony. And therefore, here the V'chaletz of Lemesiabemis is the same idea, but in reverse, and that is because although the Chazak was saying that you're also to everybody else, and you're obligated in Yibum to the Yavim, but she's making herself forbidden to the Yavim. Again, the previous case was making herself forbidden to the world, and therefore she was obligated in Chalitza for that reason. Here it's the other way around, and that is that although the Chazak would say that she's obligated in Yibum to the Yavim, but her own testimony is making herself forbidden to him, because she's saying she had a son at the time that her husband had died, but she's not believed to say that there's no Zika at all, so we do Chalitza and no Yibum. Now let's say she says, Nitin li Yavam Abedinas Yam. Now it is, let's say she left over here with Chazaka that her mother-in-law didn't have any other sons, that meaning, again, it's a paternal brother, but that is her father-in-law didn't have any other sons besides her husband. And that's how she was when she left overseas. Now, but then she comes back and she says that I had actually my mother-in-law who was married to my father-in-law had another child, which makes me another brother-in-law, another Yavim, when I was overseas. But, Amr, she says, Meis b'aliv achach meis yavmi. My husband first died and then my Yavim died, or yavmi v'achach b'aliv, that my Yavim died and then my husband died, where either one of these statements are telling us that she's saying that she's permitted to marry Lashuk, because either one, ultimately, if her Yavim's dead and her husband's dead, there's no Yavim around, so therefore she's saying that I'm permitted to marry Lashuk. So the halacha is neman that she's permitted to marry Lashuk, she's allowed to marry someone else, based on the original chazak, which anyways was that she didn't have a yavim anyway. So if her husband dies, even without children, there's no yavim, of course she can marry other people. And again, although she herself is incriminating by saying, but there was a yavim born, which is what's called hapesha asa, but that's the same hapesha hitta, because she's saying that yes, although he was born, but now he's dead. So therefore it doesn't make a difference. So she's believed because that goes together with the chazaka. Now the Mishnah tells us, let's say she had a Yavim. And the three of them, her husband and her husband's brother, her brother-in-law, they go for a trip overseas. Now, she comes back and Amr, she says, Meis b'ayli v'achkach yavmi, that my husband died and then my brother-in-law died. Or yavmi v'achkach b'ayli, my brother-in-law died, then my husband died. Halacha is ein in emenes. She's not believed. And the reason for this is, as we've been saying along, is she'in isha nemenes leimer, because a woman's not believed to say, meis yavami, that my brother-in-law died, shetinasi, that she should be able to marry other people. Again, as we said before, the whole nemenes of the woman is only regarding her husband. In the context of the halacha of not being an aguna, to marry other people, that we believe her. But regarding to say that her brother-in-law is dead, who there was an obligation of Yibum, that she's not believed to say that he's dead, to say that she can marry other people. And since the Chazaka was that there was a Yavim who they went overseas with, she's not believed. And therefore she can't marry someone else based on that testimony. Moreover, a woman's not believed to say, she's not believed to say that her sister died, which would then allow Shetekanis Lebesa that she can then go into her sister's household, meaning to marry her brother-in-law, her sister's husband, because the Isra of marrying a wife's sister, which is this halacha, is only as long as the wife's still alive. If when the wife's dead, then he can marry the sister-in-law. So she's saying, my sister's dead, I can marry her husband. Now again, that halacha of believing the testimony of the woman is only regarding her own husband for the halacha of Iguna, but it's not regarding to say her brother-in-law is dead or that her sister's dead. And similarly, ve'in ha'ish nemalayma, a man is not believed to say, meis achi, that my brother died, she'ibim ishta, which then would allow him to marry his sister-in-law, through the context of the mitzvah of Yibum, and neither to say v'lo meisa ishtoi, he's not believed, which would be the inverse of by the woman, he's not believed to say his wife died, she is al-chisa, that he can then marry her sister, that there is no such halacha. The halacha was only instituted for the woman herself, just regarding her husband, to say that, okay, we don't want her to be stuck, because a woman cannot marry two husbands, to be stuck, what's called a niguna. So for that is only the area where we allowed a woman to believe, to say that her husband died, which the Gemara now says, regarding the topic of our Mishnah, the Gemara asked the following question. Rava asked the following question of Rav Nachman. Hamazaka get le ishtai. If someone merits does a zikui of a get to his wife. In other words, he appoints a secondary person to receive, to be what's called a shlich lekabbalah, to be a messenger to receive this get that he wants to divorce his wife. He says, look, you merit it, you acquire this get for my wife right now, and that is, you're receiving, will be like she's receiving, because there's a shliach, a messenger, someone, you could appoint someone to be a proxy for you, and then he wants to make him a shliach to receive the get for his wife. Now, the Gemara is asking this question, b'makom yavam, when, in other words, this person, this man is trying to divorce his wife through a shliach to receive it for his wife, meaning when once it's received, when you're doing halacha to send it, the woman's not divorced until she actually gets it. Here it's for her to receive it. The question is, he wants to go ahead and exempt his wife if he's going to die without any children. Let's say he's about to die. And if he dies now without any children, she's going to have to go ahead and submit herself to Yibum, to her brother-in-law, to the Yavam. The question is, in such a context of when there's a brother-in-law, and that is, as Rashi explains, because if there's no brother-in-law and he wants to divorce her, it's obvious that he cannot divorce her by appointing a shlich lekabbalah until the woman actually receives it in her hand. And the reason is, because that's a halachic concept known as in chavin la'odim shleh b'fanab. You cannot create a liability for a person when it's not according to their will, that it's with their consent. And it's a liability for a woman to be divorced. So obviously you cannot create a shlich lekabbalah for the woman for her to get divorced. But here the question is, mahu, when there's a yavam, when there's a brother-in-law, who if he's going to die without any children, she's going to have to submit herself to yibum, would we say then that it would be a schus, a merit for her to be divorced, or that she won't be submitted to yibum, to her brother-in-law, or not? As Gemara explains the question, kibun desanilei, since the woman hates her brother-in-law, hates the yavam, so would we say it's actually a merit for her to get the get from her husband? And that's known as the halacha of zochon od mishlei b'fanab, that you could merit something to a person even not with their consent, even if they're not there. And therefore, yes, you could merit it to the shliach that she should be divorced right now by creating the shliach lekabbalah. Or maybe that no, kibun dezimnan derachmalei. Maybe sometimes she actually likes and appreciates her brother-in-law, and therefore chaybulah, this is creating a liability for her by being divorced from her husband, that she will not be submitted and thus never then be permitted to her brother-in-law. And therefore, and you cannot create a liability for a person without their consent. So what's the understanding? Is it a merit to be removed from the brother-in-law or not? So Malaysar of Nachman responded to Rav. He says, Tanina, this actually, the same question that we're asking is actually the suffix mentioned in our Mishnah. And that is because we find that there is this concern in the Mishnah about, is it that a woman hates her brother-in-law and it'll be a schus for her, or that she might like him and it might be a chay for her? Because we find two types of cases in our Mishnah where a woman leaves here to overseas with a certain chazaka, and then she comes back and she tries removing herself from that chazaka, which we say that she's not believed. For example, let's say when she goes out with a cheskas hetulashok, which we're assuming that she's permitted to others, and that there is no mitzvah yibum. Let's say where she went out with a child, or when she went out without a yavam. Then she comes back and she says, no, that she is muchzik for the mitzvah yibum. That is, that there was a yavam, or that her child had died beforehand. Now, that we learn in the Mishnah, although we don't believe her, she's not in the menace to contradict the chazaka, but the Mishnah said that we are concerned for what she's saying. And therefore, she has to do chalitza and not do yibim. And that is, what we do see from that statement of the Mishnah is that we don't say that the chazaka is so strong and that she, for example, let's in the case we just described, where she went out with a chazaka l'shok, that she could still marry l'shok. In other words, what that would have meant, what it would have meant to say was that she's definitely lying, because this that she's claiming to say that she doesn't have this hetul l'shuk and that she does have a zika to the yavam is only because she likes him and she wants to go ahead and have a relationship with her brother-in-law. Now, we don't say that. We say that it's not for sure that she was lying, and we say that it's not true. It's not for sure that she likes him. Maybe she was saying it just because she was being honest and because she's saying that there is a mitzvah yibum. Now, similarly, we see the same concept in the reverse, because we talk about a case in the Mishnah when a woman leaves out with a chazaka that she has yibum. Let's say she left without any children. Then she comes back and she's machzik herself l'shuk, where she says, for example, that, oh, nitin li ben, a child was born to me overseas, and first my husband died and then my son died. Where we say again in the Mishnah, the same idea where we say that we're chayshish for hadvarm, and that she cannot do yibum. Now, the chiddush of that is that we don't say that for sure she was lying, and that this that she was being machzik herself l'shuk was only because she hated him so much. But really she was lying, and we don't believe anything that she said, and there's no reason to even suspect what she was saying, and therefore she could even do Yibum, we don't say that. Because obviously sometimes she doesn't hate him, and the reason why she was saying it wasn't because she hated him, was because maybe she was saying the truth. Now obviously the Gemara is saying from those two polar cases, we see that we're in doubt. We don't know, and therefore neither one is for sure that she was saying it because she likes him, or that for sure she was saying it because she hates him, and therefore you were lying, you don't believe anything, and therefore you revert back totally to what the chazaka was. No, we have to suspect that maybe it is true. And therefore the Gemara, Rav Nachman was responding, was the same thing as applicable to the question that you're asking. When a husband is mezaka get to his wife, we're in doubt. We don't know if she likes him and therefore it's a liability for her, or if she hates him and therefore it's a schustar. And therefore, yes, the halacha is going to be the same like the Mishnah, and it's going to be chayletzes v'loy mishya bemes. Because now that the husband died, so was that a get or was it not a get? Well, it depends if she liked him or she didn't. Was it a schus or was it a chayv? And since we don't know, as we see from the Mishnah, it could be either one. So halacha would have to be that you can't do yibum, but neither can you go ahead without anything. So you would be chaletzes v'loy mishya bemes. Now, related to this question, the Gemara says, Amalei Ravina l'Rava. So Ravina asked to Rav, he says, what's with a slightly different case? Hamazaka get le'ishto, if someone merits a get to his wife, b'makum kitata, if they were quarreling, husband and wife are quarreling, and there's a big fight, ma, what's halacha over there? Would we say over there that he could be mezaka to her get? Or not? And that is as the Gemara explains the question. Kiven de isla katat about day, since there's a fight they're having with each other, so of course it's a marriage. She wants out of this. Therefore, even though she didn't get the get and is without her consent, without her knowledge, you don't need the consent, but it has to come to her hands, by appointing a shlich to receive her, of course she would prefer that. Aydilma, or maybe not, no. Nicha de gufa adivla, maybe this. Just having another person as a relationship, even if it's one of quarreling, she prefers that over being divorced and being alone. So the Gemara says, Tashma, come in here, we could prove this. The Amar Shlokesh, Rosh Lokesh said over the following maxim. He said, Tavla Mesa Tandu, it's better for a woman to have two bodies, meaning to have any husband, than being alone, being a widow. And therefore, we see that a woman would rather have a quarreling husband than be divorced. And therefore, it's not going to be a schus, and it's a chayv, and therefore you cannot make a shlich l'kabbalah even in such a case. Similarly, the Gemara concludes this parak with ideas like this, where a woman would prefer any husband than no husband. Abaye Amar, he says, Dishum shemona gavra, if the husband is short like an ant, it doesn't make a difference. She's so proud that she's married. Kurse, her cheer, this woman's cheer, bechar saromola, she puts it next to all the respectable and free women of the land. In other words, she considers herself so elevated because she's married, even though her husband is short like an ant. It doesn't make a difference. She's so proud of that. She'd rather be married than no matter who the person is. Similarly, Rav Papa, he says, "Dinafza gavra, if the man has a repulsive type of a profession where he combs wool, doesn't make a difference. Tikre besefe bava v'tesev." She'll go ahead and she won't be embarrassed. She'll call him to the opening of the threshold of the house to sit with her in front of everybody looking that their doorway is open. She's sitting on the porch with him. She doesn't care. She's so proud that she's married, even though he has a lowly job. Again, illustrating the same concept. Sutra Vashem, he says, to kul sagavra, if there's a man that there's in his lineage, there's some degrading type of in his ancestry. Again, it doesn't make a difference. The woman will not even ask something like such an insignificant type of a food like lentils, which doesn't even cost that much money. She won't even say to him, look, you know, you should thank me that I married you. You had such psul in your lineage. Even that she won't ask from him. Because she's so happy just that he should call his name on her, that she gets the same last name as him. She's so proud of that, that that's enough for her, that she won't even claim for him different things, even though he has Shemetz Psul, again, illustrating the same idea. But the Gemara does end, that Tanu Lidna Braisa, that for Kulan, all these women that their husbands are degraded, but they show like they're so happy with and show such love and affection to their husbands, it's not true. It's only because they're mezanis. They're actually having adulterous relationships with other men. Now, when they become pregnant, their vitalis, they attribute their fetus, their child, pibaleyan, in their husbands. And that is, they prefer having, as we said, any man, even if he's short as an ant or he has such a degrading job, it's only because that gives him an open license, because people are not going to suspect, what is it, how you're pregnant, how you're having a child. You're not married to anyone. They prefer to be married and they show like they're so happy with their husbands, and really they're not. It's just an excuse. It's a cover for them to be able to be mezana and then be taila bibalein. Hadnolach ha'isha shalom. We shall return to you the 15th parak, Mesechtes Yevamos, parak ha'isha shalom.